This is yesterday we spoke about Vayivasu Yaakov Levado. Yaakov Avinu remained alone. The Torah talks about his encounter with Esav. He's afraid he's going to get killed by Esav. And he had to bring all of his belongings and all of his people and cross over. It was like a ravine, a river. He had to cross over. So he made himself like a bridge. He transferred over everything from one side of the ravine to the other side of the ravine. And every time he went, so he was with other people. They were all helping him out. And then he finished everything and there was... Everything was, on the other side of the other side, except for some small drugs. Pachim katanim. And Yaakov Avinu went back by himself to get the pachim katanim. The pasuk says, "Vayivasa Yaakov levada," and Yaakov remained alone. And right afterwards, He was attacked. He was engaged in battle with the Tsar of Esav. He was afraid of encountering Esav. Esav's physical form. And he ends up with something much more challenging, much more of a threat. He ends up fighting a Malach. And he defeats the Malach. The strength of a Malach can't be measured in human terms. Malachim are not stronger than people. Their strength is on a totally different level. As strong as the strongest human is, a Malach's strength is on an entirely different level. You don't get close. It's not like you can even get closer. So you'll have a weak human. He's a lot weaker than a Malach. And a very strong human. He's a little bit closer to a Malach's strength. It's not even that. The difference between the strength of a weak human and a Malach...
But it's not physical strength.
It's not. A Malach does not have physical strength. A Malach...
So how could you do the Yaakov's physical attack?
The Melchama of Yaakov the Malach was not physical.
the Malach
was trying to rip Yaakov's soul away from God. That's when someone fights with a Malach. Now, the connection of our body with God is it's a very tenuous bond. The body, Hashem is bonded with everything in creation, but the bond between the body and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is very much beneath the surface. The bond between the soul and God is clear. The Malach was trying to kill Yaakov. He wasn't trying to kill him in the conventional sense, separate his neshama from his body. That's only temporary. Malachim know that. A soul that's separated from the body that can be put back together. The Malach is trying to rip Yaakov Avinu's neshama from God. That's permanent. It was a Muhammad in Amunah. He was filling Yaakov Avinu's mind with thoughts. That's what it was. He was filling his mind with thoughts. He was filling his mind with all the questions that people have. He was filling Yaakov Avinu's mind with where was God during the Holocaust. He was filling his mind with how could bad things happen to good people. He was filling his mind with how good things could happen to bad people. He was filling his mind with how could a 2 month old baby get run over by a car. How could four Talmidei Chachamim get butchered in a shul? That the Muhammad of Malach was Yaakov Avinu. was not a Muhammad on a physical level. Malachim, they don't fight that way. And Yaakov won. But Yivasa Yanko Levada. So it's Masha. We didn't get back to this point. It's Masha from the Medrash that these two psukim are linked. That he was alone when he went to get the Bakan Ketanim, and that he fought with the Malach, because the Medrash says, "By Yankov Vinu says by Yivasa Yaakov Levada, he remained alone," and it doesn't say that about anybody else. It only says it by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because Kadosh Baruch Hu says. V'niskav Hashem levada b'yemehu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to be alone on that day. So just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is levada b'alyanim, so Yaakov is levada b'tachtayanim. So it's mashma that Yaakov fought the Malach because he was levada. It's mashma that Yaakov defeated the Malach because he was levada. He defeated the Malach because he was levada. What does it mean to be levada? The Maral says, you had these four mighty nations that each one after the other, conquered the entire world. Yeah, we are approaching Hanukkah. We're approaching Alexander the Great. They called him Alexander the Great for a reason. You know why they called him Alexander the Great? Because he was great. Thank you, Elon. He conquered the entire known world. He never lost. One battle after another, everyone fell in front of him. There was no parallel to Alexander the Great. He was unstoppable. He took over the entire world. The statue, the Nebuchadnezzar in his dream, was a statue of power. It was a statue that was made of precious metals. It was a statue that was made out of metals that are impervious to harm. Metal is very difficult. It's very hard to break through these metals. They're strong. They're powerful. They protect. When struck with a metal, they cause a lot of damage. And what toppled the figure was a stone. Not just a stone. It's a stone that actually came from the stone that came from the statue. It's a self-inflicted stone wound. And it came down. And Yaakov is called the stone. He quotes the pasuk in Parshas Vayechi, Misham Raya Evan Yisrael, the shepherd, the stone of Israel. And that pasuk is referring to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu is an Evan, he's a stone, Yisrael. His name is Yisrael. Evan Yisrael, Evan Bernstein. You learned in TJ about 10 years ago, Evan Bernstein. I used to call him Evan. Evan, Ray Evan Yisrael. He's an Evan. Of course. You have someone in your shin named Evan. Of course you're going to say this about him. I always talked about Evan. And the shiurim I gave when I had someone named Shai. Shai is Yasa Salayach Alakayach. Yema Shishi. Shai Alambas Yesh. Evan. Evan. Remember, you don't know Evan Bernstein. Evan Bernstein. He learned in TJ, he went to a Rizukah Yeshiva. He's still there. He's an Evan. So why is Evan Bernstein still an Evan? Because the stone, you know, we went to the zoo once. There's a zoo in Ramat Gan. It's a zoo. It's a nature preserve. In some of the places, the animals run free. It's very nice. In Ramat Gan, near Bnei Brak. And they have signs. It's Dachsamir was by the gorillas. They have signs. There's a sign there. No la la achil atachayas, don't feed the animals. V'lo la hashpi alayim b'shem leifen. Not to be mashpi on them. Wait, so in English...
That's a cure.
In English, right, it's right. In English it says don't feed the animals, don't influence them. They translate what... L'chayar la hashpiya means that they don't want you to... manipulate their behaviors. I don't even know how you'd say, you know, don't don't incite them. That's what don't incite them. But they looked it up in a dictionary. This is before Google Translate. It's before there were computers. Someone looked it up in a dictionary. Lashmi, I mean, don't know what the girl said. Boy, they're really paranoid about Haredim. That's it. We're going to talk to these gorillas that are going to the army. And after a few weeks, they're going to grow pace and cut their long hair and be sitting in the basement. They are so worried. They have to put up signs not to influence the animals. This is something else. I would have taken a picture with my camera phone, but I didn't have a camera phone. There was no phones in those days that weren't connected to walls, and there was no cameras inside them, so yes. It's a different generation. You might be able to influence gorillas, but you can't influence a stone. A stone cannot be influenced. Stones act outwards. They act outwards. They make impact. Stones make an impact on others. You can't make an impact on a stone, a real stone. If you have a clay tablet and you want to make an impact on the tablet, you want to penetrate it, and so you want to draw or inscribe something on it or shape it. So clay is something, it's the opposite of a stone. The nature of clay is that it's too soft, it can't make an impact on anything. The only thing clay is good for are silly putty or Play-Doh. The only thing clay is good for is for something else that's harder than it to come along and make an impact on it. There's two basic creations. The building blocks of creation that everything is made up of. Everything is made up of these two components. Everyone has it. Is a part of everything in the world. People, animals, and rocks, and animals, and vegetables, and minerals. That has two components. There's a component of, let's say, a person that's malleable. Malleable means it's shapeable. You can take it and you can shape it into anything you want. There's a part of a person that's malleable. And then there's a part of a person, of a human being, that's not. You can't shape it in any way. It takes its form and puts it on something else. This is true on so many different levels. It's really true on so many different levels. There's the body on its own does absolutely nothing. The body on its own does not impose anything on anyone or anything. A body on its own just sits there and is dead. It's politely dead. Very polite. It sits there quietly being dead. It has nothing to say, it has nothing to, it doesn't influence, it doesn't impact. It doesn't go, the neshama on its own. It gives off. The Neshama gives off from itself. Without a body, the Neshama doesn't have anything to give off to. Neshama is very smart. The Neshama is very smart. And the body is a blank slate. I mean, I wouldn't say a body is stupid. A body is total potential. But it's a blank slate. The Neshama is very smart. Because the Neshama possesses the wisdom. The wisdom of purity. Lo kaina shamitairi. The Shem is pure. If it's pure, what does pure mean? It doesn't have anything, anything that infiltrates, anything that brings it down, anything that makes, you know, anything that dilutes it, or tries, or is mixed into it. The Shem is pure. The Shem is what renders us capable of thoughts. When our mind is filled with wise thoughts, that's coming from the neshama within us. When we think of something particularly wise, when we think of something that makes sense, when things become clear to us, that's because we have a neshama. And that clarity and that wisdom, without a body, has nowhere to go. The neshama needs the body, just as much as the body needs the neshama. The body without the neshama is dead, but the neshama without the body is useless. It's like a Rebbe whose shir doesn't show up. The relationship between the neshama and the body, the neshama is the Rebbe, and the body is taught by the neshama. The neshama trains the body to do smart things.
So which one's the malleable one?
The body is, because the body doesn't give anything to the neshama. The body doesn't contribute anything to the neshama. The neshama enlightens the body and trains the body and synthesizes with it. It's a synthesis. It bonds with the body. The relationship is rocky at first. But after many, many years, the neshama and the body should act as one, but the body should follow the neshama instead of the neshama following the body. So we have this constant mahama with ourselves that our body doesn't want to be restricted to smart things. When you're restricted to smart things, you're limited. And
isn't that only recent, though?
Well, since the time of the Chet of Adam Rishon. That you call that recent?
I thought people were attracted to other types of chachma, and nowadays only like very recently do people are attracted to things that are not chachma at all. People were attracted to other types of chachma.
What you're saying is very true. There were periods. The period that you are referring to was the period of the Ivanim, the Greeks. In time of the Greeks, the attraction was wisdom. Wisdom was idolized. It was an ideal. It wasn't always true. I mean, the Mitzrayim, they were attracted to a lot of other things. Wisdom was Yavin's thing.
500 years ago, people just wanted to be brainless?
It's getting pretty bad. If you're noticing a trend that it's getting bad, it's getting pretty bad. I mean, even my days, which was not so long ago, I'm not a fossil yet. Universities, people went to universities, they attended universities for the sake of learning. For altruistic reasons. I mean, the courses, the popular courses, were the ones that expanded a person. The philosophy courses, and those were the very courses that were dangerous to a believing Jew. The threat of college in the 70s, was that a person ideologically would be taken away from Judaism, and there was a counterforce of educated scholars, Torah scholars, that they addressed it, and we have the benefit of their efforts, you know, in their dissertations and their writings and their books. But when was the last time that you knew someone that went off the derech because of the theory of evolution? How many people do we know that they're not Shema Torah Mitzvahs because they find it ludicrous that the Torah says that the world is 5,775 years old when it's clearly a lie? And how can we believe in something that's a lie? I personally don't know anybody who has a problem with that. People just don't care. They don't care. They'll be Shema Torah Mitzvahs and they won't go off the derech. And the Torah is wrong. They have no problem with that. They're saying that. Orthodox. They'll be Orthodox. They'll be from. It's called open orthodoxy. That ideologically they could help lift the sciences to a higher standard of the Torah and still consider themselves Shemitah Mitzvahs. They have no problem with that. It doesn't make them reject the whole Torah. They could live like that. They could live with it. Live with themselves. And they have their scholars. They have their Talmid Chachamim and the Gedolim that they follow. Open orthodoxy. And they'll be insulted if you call them anything else.
They
reject. I once called someone and I said, you're a conservative. I said, don't tell me what I am. I'm an orthodox.
Why would they follow anybody if they're already making orthodox? Saying they don't follow something fully, so why should they follow
their own? It doesn't disturb them. It doesn't bother them. They don't see the contradiction. They believe in God. The parts that they don't understand, they just say I'm wrong. But they're not going to throw out everything. They keep what they want to keep. But there are many, many people that they are leaving Yiddishkeit, and there's nothing to do with it's not ideological reasons. They're leaving because they're hurt. They're leaving because they're limited. They're leaving because of frustrations. They're leaving because of damage. They leave because of rejection. They leave. So you're right. I mean, there was a period that it was a period where the world power worshipped wisdom. That's no longer true. We're living in the world of Taiva, and that's what the body wants. The body has wants. It wants everything. It's non-discriminatory. It just wants. And if it wants everything, that means its wants have nothing to do with being smart. Because if you're smart, so then some things you want, because they are things to embrace, the things that are good for you, or they're going to advance you, and the things which you reject, even though they might be comfortable, because they're going to take you away from your goal. So the body's wants have nothing to do with intelligence. They have to do with want. It wants everything. Whatever makes it wants. It just wants. It can't get anything without the neshama. So the body looks at the neshama. The body's like 5'3". And the neshama's a step later. Because the Hostess Twinkies are on the top shelf in the store. And the body can't get to the Hostess Twinkies without the stepladder. And Hostess Twinkies are really soft and fuzzy and sweet. Even though they're terrible for you. I'm saying they're not good for you at all. So the neshama is a stepping ladder. You use the neshama to get up to the Hostess Twinkies to get to the top. That's what the body does. That's not good. The proper relationship between body and soul is the neshama tells the body, listen, you're a blank slate. If we listen to you, we're both going to get lost. Because you have no idea where you're going. Because you just want. You want everything. Could you imagine having a GPS program that chooses every option at the same time? To right, left, straight. Go around the roundabout. First exit, sixth exit, fourth exit, fifth exit. All the exits, just go all of them. We want all the exits, just go. You get lost. The neshama tells the body, you don't know where you're going. You don't have a direction. Listen to me and we're going to get there if the body listens. So then the neshama is making an impact on the body. The neshama is the stone and the body is the clay. So this is true as far as the relationship between body and soul is concerned. Our body is chaymer. Chaymer is formless clay. It wants without think. It wants without thinking. Whatever it wants, and we know we have this. There is a voice inside of us that wants things without thinking. It's very strong. And if we're smart, we only give in to it if it makes sense.
How does a stone be mashpia on anything? A stone doesn't want anything; it just is.
That's the muscle. I mean, a stone. The muscle of a stone is that you can't make an impact on it. It makes an impact on something else. I mean, this muscle can go further. You have people that they work with Baal Tshuva, and they go to college campuses. And they make close relationships with people, and they bring people into their houses. And only someone that's a stone should be involved in Kiryas Rechavim. You have to be a stone in order to do this, because the hashpa, the influence, and you want to influence them. You're trying to show them who they really are. And you're trying to be mashpia on them. If you're a stone and they're clay, you'll get through. You'll be a success. If you're not a stone, they're going to be mashpia on you. There was a whole exchange of letters. Now, I love the letter section of Mishpacha magazine. That's the first thing I go to, and sometimes it's the only thing I read. It's about real people, and they bring up real. They open up issues. And there was someone that was writing with great pain about their friend from yeshiva that they were learning with all the years, and the guy was he was a mutzluch. He was an Ernst Ingemann. He was someone that was earnest. He was earnest, and he was successful. And for a number of years, he was in chinuch, and then he changed directions. He had a career change. He went into kiruv, and he's not the same person anymore. His mannerisms, his way of speech, the way he dresses, and he described of course, the first thing to go is the white shirts, the colored shirts, and of course, the next letter writer says, "Don't judge people by colored shirts." But he wasn't judging him by colored shirts. He was judging him by the change to colored shirts, and that's a very big difference. If he always would have been wearing collared shirts, they wouldn't have judged him by the collared shirts. The friend was changing. He's not a rock. He's not a rock. If he's not a rock, get out. You have to be a rock. You're being mashpi on them. They're not being mashpi on you.
How do you be a rock?
This is how you do it. You have to be alone. This is what we spoke about yesterday. Vayivasi Yanka Levade. It's a fine balance between being a member of society with others. You interact with others, and you're a product. You're a product of an environment, your parents, your community, your schools, and your bayim. And there's a lot of voices in your head. You've got the father voice, and the mother voice, and the older brother voice, and the teacher voice, the principal voice, and your friends' voices, and anybody that happens to be watching you at the time. No matter who they are, they have a voice. They have all these voices. And you can react in two ways to all those voices. They're there. You can't get rid of them. And no one is advocating becoming a hermit. There are two things you could do with those voices. You could sift through them, and you embrace what you find true from the things that you're hearing, and then you reject the parts that are not for you. And all those voices could help you find your own voice, because we do need help to find our own voices. And all the things you hear, you know, the society, the certain standards in society, we're imprisoned by them. Some of them make sense. So try and make sense out of it. It has to make sense to you. If your Rebbe tells you something, you'll follow it blindly. Think it through. It should make sense in your own way. Your parents, and under certain circumstances you find yourself in, you don't have a choice. You have rules. Okay, so then you don't have a choice. But that doesn't cover what you think. It doesn't cover what you think. It's even when you're in a setting where you have rules, you're never imprisoned. You always have wings. You have your own voice. If you're in a setting, for whatever reason, when you're young, you're in settings because your parents make you. When you're older, you have your own choices. Sometimes you find yourself in settings that are really not for you because it's something you want to get out of it. You know, I was in Tel Shiva for 12 years. I think the first one to say it was a big misfit. It was a misfit. All 12 years was a big misfit. But there was something that I wanted there that I couldn't get anywhere else. Tel Shiva was a place where there's a lot of strong voices. A lot of powerful voices. It's not like the kind of place that they encourage. Having your own voice. So you find yourself in a situation. You want to learn how to learn. You're not the most yeshivish guy. But you're smart enough to know if you want to go out to learn, you have to go to the yeshivish places because they know how to learn. You go to the, we have someone sitting at this table. He came to TJ, it's a nice yeshivish place. He wasn't like the rest of the guys in the yeshiva. Bunch of grungy guys. Earthy, grungy guys. He wanted to go to this nice modern Orthodox place. And it was really polite and well-mannered and well-spoken. He sat down in a shir that they called a machshava shir and ran right back to TJ because he saw that they don't have anything to offer. And that's the way it is. So that's the right way. The wrong way is that everything you think or say or do, you have in mind all the voices. I'm going to do this because this authority figure says this is what I have to do. I'm not going to do that because I heard you're not supposed to do that. And I'm not talking about the area of halacha. Okay, there's plenty of areas that are outside of a beferish mitzvah, let's just say. To find your own voice in halacha, that's to understand that you really can't decide whether you're going to do it or not. That's it. But people that don't have their own unique way, the confidence that they see things their own way, their own unique way, and it doesn't have to be the same as everyone else. They don't have that confidence that you're entitled to view things your way, your own unique way. And you can fight it out with your chavrusa, and at the end, neither one of you will agree to each other. That's fine. Like I always said, if two people learn with each other and they don't have a fight, then they're not really learning with each other. Because everybody views things differently. So if you're not fighting, that means you're not working hard on your own. You're not working hard on your own vision of what you're learning. You're not working hard. You agree with someone else. That means you're looking at things the way he's looking at it, and you're accepting it. That's not right. You don't see it his way. You see it your way. You have people that I just learned this. It's people that they're colorblind. They don't even realize they're colorblind. He's a friend. He didn't even realize he was colorblind until he tried to get into the Israeli army. They told him he was colorblind. I said, how could you not know? He said, I see some colors. I just don't see them the same way everyone else does. He never knew. But every single thing that he sees differently than everyone else. And he never knew. So such a person is never alone. Because wherever they are, they've got their father and their principal and their mother and their son, their best female friend. You know, she has a voice in there. There's a lot of that in there. I call it G-O-B. It's when the mind's all gobbed up, G-O-B. Gobbed up with gunk. G-O-B stands for girl on brain. And that voice is there also. The voice is there too. So you're never alone. There are people that all they are is modeling clay. If you have your own way, then you're a stone. You're a rock. If you're a product of all the hashpois, all the influences of the world, then you're just silly putty. Emphasis on the silly. We don't practice blind faith. You don't follow blindly. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Ha'amidu tamidim harbe. Stand up many tamidim. Ha'amidu tamidim. It's a Mishnah. Ha'amidu tamidim harbe. Stand up many tamidim. Yeah, some people interpret it that when you walk into the room, tamidim is supposed to stand up for the Rebbe. You're supposed to make as many tamidim stand up for you as possible. Make sure you go in the front door. That's tamidim. Amidu tamidim harbe. Amidu tamidim harbe means that when you teach a tam, you're supposed to give him his own legs to stand on. Give him the facility, give him the kaikas, give him the kalim. To make his own decisions. Give him a give him a hadracha, give him a general mahalach. Speak it over with him so that, so he sees it. The purpose of a mashpia is not to smother the mushba. The purpose of mashpia is to bring it out. Amidu tamidim harbe, a therapist. The difference between a good therapist and a lot of these therapists is about $7,000, right? The good therapist sees that his goal, his mission is that the person shouldn't need him anymore. And the bad therapist fosters a dependency. The good therapist is trying to make a rock. And the bad therapist is trying to create silly putty. The more silly putty, the more money. It's out there. These are examples. These are just examples. You ask the question, how do you become a rock? You become a rock. By understanding things. That's how you become a rock. You become a rock by understanding things your own way. You become a rock by using all the messages, all the mass of information and understanding as a tool to help you see things your own way and to understand things your own way. And then you're alone. It's a good type of alone. Yaakov Levado. Then you're alone. Yaakov Avinu was a rock. Yaakov Avinu was alone. Yaakov Avinu had his own wisdom. He didn't have other people's wisdom. If you have somebody else's wisdom, Rabbi say, if you go, let's say someone goes to one of these seminars, and these seminars are very, very powerful, the Kiev seminars, and they do a lot of good. And there's a lot to admire about them, but they can only be the first step. They can't be, you know, something that he went to all the seminars, he listened to all the lectures, all the recordings, And he knows word for word, you know, how to respond and what to answer the question. But he never thought about his own emunah. He just has the voices of all the voices in his head. One of the times it's very easy to rip such a person away from emunah because all you have to do is ask him a question that he never thought of. On an area that he missed a lecture one day. He missed a lecture one day and they weren't talking about something. He doesn't have anything, he has no resource of his own. He only has what was imprinted on him from somewhere else. And if you want to know why people are going off the derech nowadays, Rachman Litzlan. A big part of it is because our generation is a generation where kiruv is for the Balei Tshuva and not for the from people. And the from people, they know it and they accept it, but they never thought about it. The Muhammad of Yankov with the Malach was a Muhammad that the Malach was trying to rip Yankov's Neshama away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If Yankov Avinu would have been someone that he believes because he heard this from Yitzchak and he heard this from Avram, there weren't too many people out there. There weren't too many voices. He learned. So then you fight with the Malach. If you're not alone, if you're not your own man, if you're not an original thinker, and if you're not somebody you thought it through yourself, so then you're going to lose. The Malach will be able to fill your mind with thoughts that are going to make you doubt the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It was a mind war. Just that fool I said, it was a mind war. He filled his mind with heretical thoughts. He was going out of his mind. Literally, going out of his mind. Just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is Levada, Veniska Vashem Levada B'yemahu. So Yankel Vin is also Levada. They're both levada. The pasuk says about what? What?
Was it easier or harder because he was levada?
That's why he was able to defeat the Malach. Levada means that everything that he believed in, he looked at it through the lens of himself, his internal self. So he wasn't somebody else. He didn't have somebody else. He didn't have his parents' emunah. He didn't have his older brother's emunah. He didn't have his madrich's emunah. He had his own emunah. He was alone. That's what alone means. His father helped him get there. His grandfather helped him get there. But instead of him believing in Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, he had his own relationship with God. He's called Elokei Yaakov, means that he had his own relationship with God. He didn't relate to God as Elokei Avraham. Avraham Avinu helped him discover who Yaakov was. And his father helped him discover who Yaakov was. This is elementary child raising advice, by the way. It's a shame when you get married to find tzaddikuses. And you become wonderful original thinkers. When you have children, your achrayus is to help the child find who they are. But Yavasa Yankel Avadai, Yaakov is alone. That's what it says in the Medrash. In the Maral, it says Yaakov is a stone. Being a stone is the same thing as being alone. And then you're like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is alone. Hashem is an original thinker. He's Mamash an original thinker. Then a Malach can't tear you away. Nobody could tear you away.
Malach did, though, a little bit.
Was
that because he wasn't enough of an original thinker?
He was able to inflict damage on the Yerech. The Yerech is close to the place where children come out of, because there's two parts of Yankov. There's Yankov if he'd be the only person in the world? Yankov as Yankov. And then there's Yankov the father. And Yankov as Yankov was perfect. And the Malach couldn't make any inroads in that. But Yankov's ability to pass on what he has to his children was not perfect. That, it's thigh, it means it's close to the place where children come out of. It's Derish Hashmad. That's what Chazal says, it's Derish Hashmad. That there was a generation called Derish Hashmad that they were ripped away from Klal Yisrael, they converted. Derish Hashmad. His ability to give over to his children wasn't perfect. Yankov Avinu was not Adarishan Kaidim Echet. He didn't get there. And Yankov Avinu is not Melech HaMashiach. He didn't get there either. So he was perfect. But I just, you know, if you already mentioned that, I just want to remind you that he was only lame for a short amount of time. He was lame until the sun rose. And once the sun rose, he was healed. So even though there was and is a time when there are casualties that fall from the descent of every anchor, but there's going to be a great healing. That time is now. The Avaida in us, number one, is to improve ourselves in all areas of Torah and Mitzvahs. And everyone knows the areas. And no one has the same areas. We all have our areas. Especially when shocking things happen, it's a wake-up call. That's number one. But most important of all, more than the areas, more than fine-tuning the mitzvahs, and the diktuk and halacha, and the dedication, and the mesiris nefesh, for kiyum mitzvahs, and for limud ha-Torah, and strengthening the asmada b'Torah, and the avos Torah. These things are so chashuv. But more than that, is that the voices in our head should be our own voices, and not from what's going on outside of us. When somebody listens to the voice of Rebbe and he's like modeling clay, at least he'll be a good modeling clay. It's not a disaster. it could be for a temporary stage, it's okay. But that's not all the voices that are out there. And the voices that we're facing out there are dangerous ones, is that things happen accidentally. Not everything is divine providence. We see contradictions. And in our mind, it's hard to imagine that it's all with a design. And there's all kinds of voices that talk about it. It's random. The world is a hefker. There's no rhyme or reason. Or it's because of this. There are people in the world. They hold power. It's because of this power holders, manipulations, and it's counterbalanced by that power's manipulations. So like we ascribe the world events to the decisions of man. We get involved in the politics. We get involved in the publicity and the news. There's nothing that's happening now that's happening because of anyone's politics, anyone's decisions, anyone's manipulations, anyone's involvement. Especially now, anything that's happening now is hashkacha lamala. Everything in the world that's happening is because of Klal Yisrael. There's nothing in the world that's, it's all one, and the pieces of the puzzle are starting to come together. You know, the far-flung worlds and the nations and the events, it's starting to come together. And there's nothing that's happening now, nothing that's happening now that could be explained in a rational manner. And there's nothing that's happening now that is not part of the world coming back together again to v'nisko Hashem levada b'yamahu. That's our original thinking. We have to look at it our way, instead of the way people describe it. It's all Yad Hashem. You got to think about it. You hear, you know, I'm on top of the news. You hear about new events and things that happen. Think about it. Think about it with your own voice, with your own thoughts, and try to make a theory about it, and a theory that makes sense, a theory that has, that there's a plan, a theory that there's a plan, it's part of a plan, it's a part of a plan to make things better. Some things we'll understand, and some things we'll realize our limitations. Next week we're going to talk about Paraduma.
Can we already talk about Paraduma?